Thank you and good afternoon. A blueberry farm will be hosting a June Twilight meeting hosted by the University of Illinois Extension. Blueberries are the focus of the University of Illinois Extension's June 18th Twilight meeting, starting at 6 p.m. The event is free, but pre-registration by June 15th is requested. Bill Bass and the family of Blueberry Hill and Bass Farms are working with local food and small farm educators to host the meeting near Cobden. Anyone involved or interested in local food production or learning more about farms in the region is invited. Established by Charlie Staudbacher years ago as a U-pick farm for blueberries, blackberries, and raspberries, Blueberry Hill Farm was bought by Bill Bass and family and continues to produce blueberries and blackberries. Bass, an experienced fruit and vegetable grower, operates a retail specialty crop business near Cobden. Customers may still pick black blueberries and blackberries at Blueberry Hill. However, much of the fruit is pre-picked and sold through Bass Farm's numerous retail outlets. Currently, Blueberry Hill includes 7 acres of blueberries and 3 acres of blackberries. Bass will discuss his experiences starting and expanding production. Topics will include establishing and maintaining blueberry and blackberry plantings to post-harvest handling and marketing. Blueberry Hill is located off Illinois 51, about 6 miles north of Anna in Union County. The address is 675 Wrights Crossing, Cobden. Register online or by calling 618-695-6060 by June 15th. Limited rainfall and warm temperatures, along with trade uncertainty, has farmers under pressure. Farmers fortunate enough to receive significant rainfall the past 2 weeks breathed a brief sigh of relief. The portion of topsoil moisture rated poor or very poor statewide declined from 27% on May 27th to 22% the first of this week. But recent rainfall, along with trade uncertainty, seemed to let some of the air out of the crop markets just as some farmers felt better about their 2018 crop prospects. Now farmers face an uncertain future in the current weather market. Todd Hobbs, University of Illinois Ag Economist, discussed the situation. Hobbs will be one of the featured speakers at Illinois Farm Bureau's Farm Income and Innovations Conference, August 1st in Normal. Registration for the event opened this month. We've had some decent prices, especially for soybeans, where farmers might have been able to lock in $10 to $10.15, and corn prices were on the rise, he said, but it's getting tight. We've seen some real weaknesses in the commodity markets recently, he continued. There's a lot of trade uncertainty. It looks like that will continue near term. Meanwhile, crop conditions remain pretty good after a delayed start to the planting season and recent dryness concerns. The portion of crops rated good to excellent in Illinois this week totaled 81% for corn, up from 59% at the same time last year, and 78% for soybeans, down 2% from the previous week. We're off to pretty good crop conditions across a long stretch of the Corn Belt, which isn't helping price at all, Hubbs said. We tend to see a weather rally in June or July if it dries up a bit. Farmers may think about pricing some corn or soybeans in the weeks ahead. Overall, Hubbs advises farmers to know their margins, pounce on rallies, and watch their costs. Getting the best price you can get and setting your margins is going to be very important this year, he said. With the kind of demand we've seen globally, there's a chance for prices to stay firm, but we're always susceptible to weather. USDA estimates net farm income this year will decrease by $4.3 billion to $59.5 billion, which would be the lowest since 2006. Production expenses are forecast to rise $3.5 billion to $359.2 billion this year, led by a 13% hike in interest expenses, a 10% jump in fuel prices, and a 2.5% increase for hired labor. For more information about the Farm Income and Innovations Conference, visit www.ilfb.org or visit your county farm bureau to register. The event will be held at the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center in Normal on August 1st, with an international reception scheduled for the evening of July 31st. Herbicide-resistant weeds and managing them is certainly a challenge for today's farmers. But herbicide-tolerant weeds is not new. In fact, the first reports date back to the 1970s. North Dakota State University Extension agent Sandra Langseth explains how that resistance occurs.
Weeds resistant to a herbicide is kind of a naturally occurring process. So think, you know, natural selection. There are just biotypes that exist that have unique characteristics in our weed population that make them less susceptible to a particular herbicide. So I think it's, you know, just important to note that herbicides themselves don't cause resistance, but how we use them, whether that's on our farms or in our lawns or homes and gardens, can help accelerate that resistance. And so, again, if a weed is resistant to a particular herbicide, that means that it can withstand being, you know, sprayed with Roundup. It will live through that application.
There are a few factors that determine how fast that resistance can occur.
It really depends on the weed biology and also some of our management practices. But, you know, weed biology is really, really important. So first, think about the weed's reproductive capacity. So does it produce a lot of seeds that are maybe kind of long-lived in the soil? Or also we can think about, you know, weed dispersal. So if we think about kochia, kochia is one of the weeds that we really struggle with in terms of control, and, you know, kochia produces a fair number of seeds, but it also can roll. So it's a tumbleweed, it can roll to your neighbor's field. And so when we're thinking about weed resistance, you know, certainly there's a lot that we need to do on our farm, but there's a lot that we need to do as an agricultural community to make sure that we're actively managing weed resistance.
There are some strategies farmers can utilize in reducing problems with herbicide-tolerant weeds.
For farmers, it's important, again, to remember that we cannot prevent weed resistance, but we can delay it and we can manage it. And so this time of year, we should be scouting our fields. So, you know, what kind of weeds do we have out there now, especially once we start with some of our early season, you know, whether it's a pre-emergent herbicide or a post. After that application, go out there and make sure, you know, you don't have any pockets that are still thriving. If you see kind of a, you know, an area in the field where, you know, shoot, I sprayed that part, it should be dead, what's going on? That might be some area that you're going to kind of want to maybe mark, watch, or go out there with a different herbicide to control those pockets. So scouting is important this time of year and throughout the season. Other things that we should look at, diversified crop sequence, even if it's just corn and soybeans. I mean, growing beans on beans is very hard to control. A lot of our broadleaf annual weeds. So even a corn and soybean rotation, if you have other crops in there, that's even better. Diversified crop sequence is a really big deal as well.
That's North Dakota State University Extension agent Sandra Langseth. The Farm Show will return after these messages. In national ag news today, the Department of Agriculture released its hold on enrollment in the Conservation Reserve Program, allowing farmers and ranchers to voluntarily enroll their farmland. USDA paused CRP enrollment because acreage in the program was nearing a cap set by the 2014 Farm Bill of 24 million acres. In 2016, 23.9 million acres were enrolled in the program, according to Dr. John Newton, American Farm Bureau Federation Market Intelligence Director.
For the last year, enrollment in CRP has been very limited, but now estimates are less than 23 million acres are enrolled in the CRP program. We also know that there are a number of acres set to expire from the CRP program, so there's an opportunity for growers to get some ground back into that CRP program.
Enrollment is open now until August. Newton says the emphasis on continuous CRP enrollment will ensure that the most sensitive acreage will be enrolled in the program.
It's important to know that CRP is a voluntary program aimed at conserving soil, water, and wildlife resources. And they do that by removing highly erodible and environmentally sensitive lands from production, and farmers then install resource-conserving practices. USDA does provide an annual rental rate on CRP ground.
Going forward, Newton says there's congressional interest in expanding the CRP acreage cap and updating the rental rate methodology in the next farm bill.
We know that the House bill had proposed to increase the acreage cap from the current level of 24 million acres up to 29 million acres, and then Congress also proposed substantial modifications to the rental rates under the CRP program, and really the rental rate adjustments designed for some of those young beginning farmers that are competing with CRP ground in their attempts to lease cropland.
That's AFBF Market Intelligence Director John Newton. More tariffs are expected from Mexico after the nation announced its 20% tariff on U.S. pork earlier this week. The list of tariffs from Mexico includes apples, cheeses, potatoes, cranberries, and Tennessee and bourbon whiskeys, among other items. Mexico is responding to U.S. steel and aluminum tariffs enacted by President Trump and put into place last week after exempting Canada, Mexico, and European Union previously from the tariffs. The tariffs will impact just more than 1% of all U.S. exports to Mexico, but will have significant impact on targeted industries, including agriculture. Farmers for Free Trade released a statement this week saying the tariffs will exact immediate and painful consequences. Meanwhile, the European Union has planned retaliatory tariffs on U.S. motorcycles, jeans, and whiskeys. Those tariffs will start in July. The Department of Agriculture this week said more than 20,000 dairy farmers have enrolled in the Dairy Margin Protection Program, which enrollment for closes Friday. USDA Undersecretary Bill Northey told Politico he expects more producers to enroll in the program compared to last year. In 2017, roughly 20,300 dairy farmers enrolled in the program, accounting for 64% of U.S. milk production. Congress earlier this year revised MPP retroactively for 2018, including lower premiums for higher levels of coverage. Dairy groups had long advocated for changes to the program that did not provide a meaningful safety net, according to the National Milk Producers Federation at the time. Northey says USDA has already sent about $19 million in checks to producers who signed up for higher levels of coverage and therefore would have received an MPP payment in the last few months. The enrollment deadline was originally June 1st, but was extended a week by USDA. Canada wants the U.S. to explain an additional $30 billion made available to support farmers harmed by trade woes and how the U.S. might distribute the funds. Canada made the request of the World Trade Organization last week. Canada's written question asked the United States to explain the U.S. Bipartisan Budget Act of 2018, in which Congress lifted certain restrictions on the U.S. Agriculture Secretary's authority to use Commodity Credit Corporation funds, according to Reuters. The corporation has broad authority to make loans and direct payments to U.S. farmers when prices for agricultural goods are low. The White House has previously indicted that it is looking at ways to use the Commodity Credit Corporation funds to offset farm income losses in the trade war with China or others. Canada also wants to know if Washington can use the funds to buy domestic surpluses of agricultural products. That's all the time we have today on the Farm Show. Reporting for WSMI, this has been Jamie Geisler.